Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Like so many municipalities across the nation, 2020 has been challenging, difficult, and in many cases, downright painful. Prince George's County is no exception. It has been hit particularly hard by the pandemic, with infection rates consistently some of the highest in Maryland. And there are other issues that continue to simmer just below the surface. For example, the search for a new police chief, still in progress. Well, tonight, we talk about those issues and many others with Todd Turner, the outgoing chairman of the Prince George's County Council. If you have a question for the chairman or about Prince George's County, you can give us a call right now. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mr. Chairman, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Harold. I appreciate the opportunity. It's been too long.
Absolutely. I appreciate you coming in. So let's get right to it and talk about some of the issues that are pertinent to right now. I want to talk to you about, you know, COVID-19 and just where the county is right now. How would you characterize where the county is in reference to the phase that it's in, how it's doing in regards to fighting the pandemic? Give me your evaluation.
No, I appreciate the question. As you indicated, it's been a very challenging year for Prince George's County. I would say that the county is doing as best we can, I believe, in order to meet the challenges before us and our residents in particular. Obviously, as you noted, unfortunately, we are not doing the right kind of metrics with respect to the number of cases that we have in the county and a number of fatalities as well. However, you know, if we haven't done the efforts up until this point, almost 9 months into this pandemic, things could be a lot worse. And so, you know, that's what I'm thankful for, particularly the partnership that we've developed over my last 2 years as chair, but particularly this year in this crisis with the county executive and her team, Angela Alsobrooks, to be able to try to address those issues because they could be overwhelming. And we see, obviously, right now what the rest of the country is dealing with respect to a surge in cases. And so we're trying to manage that as best we can. We prepared for it earlier this year. We didn't get to the point where we, unfortunately, we find ourselves today. And so we will continue to work hard to try to address the issue going forward.
This is not an easy thing to govern, to manage from a political standpoint. Are you in lockstep with the way that the county executive has been handling this?
Yes. You know, they always say, you know, the crisis brings out usually the best in people. You get to see them. And I've had a firsthand opportunity to work with County Executive Alsobrooks and her management team to try to address the numerous issues that have come up during the course of this past year. I mean, if I look back as I am now, you know, being reflective as my chairmanship comes to an end this year, from where we started in March, the efforts that we made working with particularly our federal delegation with respect to the federal funds through the CARES Act, we've stood up so many emergency assistance programs, whether it's, you know, for our restaurant industry, for daycare, for our employees who are impacted through our employee Prince George's. And, you know, legislation that the county council has adopted with respect to impacting evictions, late fees. You know, it does boggle your mind sometimes all the work that we were able to do in, to be honest with you, an environment that we were not traditionally used to doing in a virtual environment. As of the beginning of March, you know, we just got into our budget process. The county executive introduced her budget as we thought it was going to be, and she ultimately had to send us an amended budget based on what was occurring with COVID. But, you know, from the middle of March to the state of emergency here in Prince George's County until now, we have operated virtually as the county council, as a legislative body for Prince George's County, and undertaken, you know, in addition to the emergency operations that we've had during this period of time, all the other legislative functions that we have, including in our land use capacity as the Board of Health, particularly. And so it's been, obviously a challenging situation, but I have to give credit where credit is due, both to my colleagues for their adapting to this new environment, and more particularly to the staff of the legislative branch of the county council to move into this virtual operations mode and to do it, for the most part, without any issues, and to be able to move the county forward, particularly in this difficult time.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking all things Prince George's County with the council chair, Todd Turner. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. We will be taking your phone calls all the way up until 8 o'clock. Let me go straight to the phone lines. Troy calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Troy. What's on your mind? Troy, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can hear you. This is Troy Livingston. My question pretty much was to ask.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Tori Livingston.
Yes, I heard you. Go right ahead.
I wanted to find out more about how you're making the public aware of the things that are going on. Is there a website? Is there, community newsletters or something that we can go to find out, you know, if you have any sort of grassroots efforts to organize, you know, community teams or anything like that to help with contact tracing or just more involvement from the community and more awareness?
Yes, there are definitely, whether it's social media, electronic newsletters that both the county executive done, my colleagues on the county council, are sending out constant information with respect to programs, activities that are available to residents, to businesses in the county. Obviously, you can always go to the county council's website or the county's website for issues with respect to both testing and contract tracing as part of that process. And I have to say, Harold, the best thing that has come as a result of this pandemic is the fact that Prince Georgians have come together to support each other, whether it's government or not-for-profits or faith-based communities. Everybody is pitching in to try to help, whether it's dealing with food insecurity issues, whether it's dealing with making sure people have PPE. And as you're going out, and as I have gone out on occasion in Prince George's County, although we always ask people to social distance, you're seeing people wearing face masks. There's a feeling out there that we're all in this together. Not to say that we don't have those out there who are not doing the right thing, and that obviously impacts all of us. But that's the one thing I can look back on this year and say, because of this circumstance, Prince Georgians have come together. Hopefully, we as the county government have provided some leadership and opportunity and resources, but we know we can't do it all by ourselves, and I appreciate the Prince Georgians for being strong during this period of time as well.
Troy, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking with the Prince George's County Council Chair Todd Turner about all things Prince George's. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, and this was actually reported in the District of Columbia today, and I was really curious about this. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser was talking about the fact that their CARES Act funding for renters and landlord is virtually untapped. $10 million for landlords who are not receiving rental payments, and some $6 million for renters who are eligible but not making rental payments. And the mayor was saying, look, apply. It's going to be exhausted in the fall. I know that, you know, for the state of Maryland, there have been, you know, similar kinds of funding. Are Prince Georgians that you know of, are they utilizing this?
Yes. So I would say District of Columbia, if you want to help us out in Prince George's County, we'll take the funding.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So between CARES Act funding, funding through HUD and other sources, we allocated close to probably, and we just received another $2.6 million from the state of Maryland through their CARES Act funding. So over $10 million has been allocated during the course of this year for rental and utility assistance. We went through our what we call our emergency rental assistance program. We have a 1.0 and a 2.0. The first version was directly to residents and tenants who may have been impacted by COVID-19. We had an initial very robust response. Over 5,000 people responded to an inquiry about whether or not they need rental assistance. During the course of the review of that, obviously our staff, working with some not-for-profits here in Prince George's County, tried to get through all of those requests and go through the applications. And we wound up being able to assist, I think, close to about 700 families, spending probably about $2.5 million. And what we found out was that people were not able to complete the application process in order to verify, you know, that they were impacted by COVID-19 and what their rental amount was. And so our Department of Housing and Community Development, under leadership of Director Estella Alexander, adjusted the program. We now call it 2.0. Mm-hmm. And we are following similar jurisdictions in Maryland and the state of Maryland to provide payments directly to the landlord. So it's the landlord who is applying on behalf of the tenant. Now, obviously, that creates issues with the application process and verifying the information, but it's actually going directly to the landlords who have the obligation then not to bring any actions against these persons. And so, like I said, we just received an additional allocation of $2.6 million, which we can continue to use for next year, unlike the CARES Act funding that expires within the next 30 days. And so we'll have additional assistance available to families in Prince George's County who are still being impacted. The one thing I will say, and I know we will continue to advocate with our federal delegation, and I know I think Prince George's County, based on the elections results from earlier this month, very much looking forward to a new Biden-Harris administration and to Congress moving forward. So we'll work with our federal delegation to make sure that we're able to continue to use the additional funding, hopefully that to provide or to give us more time to use the CARES Act funding, because there is a continuing need as we see today.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to the Prince George's County Council Chairman Todd Turner about all things Prince George's. Let's go to Tony calling from Temple Hills. Tony, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, how you doing? I had a question for the gentleman that was talking. I want to know, how was the county exec dealing with, as an employee of the Department of Corrections, how were they dealing with the hazardous pay for the employees who not recognized through this pandemic that we're going through?
So, no, I appreciate the question, and thank you for your service here in Prince George's County. Obviously, as the pandemic occurred in the beginning, we know we had some issues with respect to the Department of Corrections and our facility here. Obviously, as part of that, we've done a better job, as recognized by the court as well, with the distribution of PPE and testing for those that happen to find themselves within our corrections department. The county council has now three times, I believe, this year authorized additional hazard pay for our first responders as part of utilizing the CARES Act funding. We just did one not less than 2 weeks ago that extended and through, I think, the end of September to be able to provide additional assistance. Obviously, those had to be negotiated with the unions that represent, whether it's public safety or other agencies that are on the front line, including the Department of Health. We have authorized that additional funding. It does take a little bit of time. The other thing that we did authorize most recently, because people were not able to take vacation or didn't want to take vacation because they couldn't go anywhere, so we actually extended the opportunity to carry over your leave balance as a county employee until 2021, which usually would have to be use it or lose it by the end of the year. So that's additional assistance we hopefully can provide to our county employees because of the outstanding work that they're doing every single day to try to address the issues that we're facing today.
Okay. Thank you so much, Tony. 202 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to the chairman of the Prince George's County Council, Todd Turner. Today is his last full day in that position, and we are taking a look back at some of the critical issues that have faced the county this year, as well as looking ahead at some of the challenges that are still ahead of us. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I've got a couple of minutes before I take a break, but I wanted to ask you, I wanted to kind of go back to something that I asked earlier when I made the comment about being, you know, in lockstep with, you know, the county executive. One of the things that I think has been observed is that this county council has indeed not had too many, at least public clashes with the county executive. Do you think that's particular to Prince George's County, this particular council? We have seen it in the District of Columbia. We've seen it in Montgomery County. We've seen some of these things even in Baltimore City. And so, you know, what's happening in Prince George's where everyone seems to be getting along?
Hopefully that shouldn't be too surprising for Prince George's County, but I think it is a testament, to both the county executive's leadership style and my leadership style. I think we agreed at the beginning that we were here for one Prince George's to be able to move that forward. And if we do disagree or have differences of opinion, as adults, we have those conversations privately, and we take actions based on that. I'll be honest with you, I can't count on one hand how many times that's occurred. And I think that's, again, a testament to the relationship that we built over these past 2 years. Obviously, last year was a little bit different because it was a transition year with a new county executive and her getting her team together, but also with the county council. You know, we added two members, at-large members, to the council. We had almost the majority of the council to be new as well. So last year was very much a learning process, I think, both for the county executive and our county council. And so, again, I think I always, as being somewhat of a veteran of county government, particularly the legislative branch, I've seen when we haven't gotten along with the county executive, and that doesn't bode well for the county.
I need to stop you right there because I've got to take a break. Hopefully you can sprinkle some of that political pixie dust on Capitol Hill. They could certainly use it. Kim in Temple Hills, Woodard in Capitol Heights, we're going to talk to you next. Do not hang up. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on 202-319-7810 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking to Todd Turner, the outgoing chair of the Prince George's County Council. We're talking all things Prince George's County. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lots of questions for the council chair tonight, but let me go back to the phone lines. Let's talk to Woodard. Woodard calling from Capitol Heights. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening.
How are you?
I am well. Good evening, Mr. Fisher and Mr. Turner. I was calling because Mr. Turner stated earlier that he, along with his team and the county executive, Angela Also Brooks, were doing their best in handling the pandemic. And I just wanted to state that I beg to differ because I feel as though there's been one too many deaths and it's still ongoing. I understand earlier in the stage of the pandemic that we were dealing with the unknown, but we've been in it now for several months and much has been learned and there's still a lot to be learned. But I feel as though at some of these nursing facilities, there are newly infections coming in daily. And it puts family members at a disadvantage because I haven't seen my loved ones since March of this year. And it's due to the nursing facility where my loved one is. They have new infections, and then they still have staff upticks. that are, you know, coming in the building that are infected. So where does that leave family members? You're not able to see your loved one. Your loved one misses you and vice versa. But I feel as though the loneliness and not being able to see your loved ones in Zoom conference just simply doesn't cut it. It's very hard on the family and the loved one. So he stated earlier that they were doing their best. My suggestion is that they go back to the table, do some more creative thinking, let some new juices flow, and come up with some better solutions for all of us, the residents inside as well as the family members.
You want to, of course, react to that, Mr. Turner?
Sure, sure. Listen, we all feel for that that situation. And I have to say, since the beginning of the pandemic and the state of emergency, Prince George's County has not gone along necessarily with the state and the governor with respect to the quickness of the opening of facilities. And I know that can cause causes a hardship not only for family members who have loved ones in nursing facilities, but also to our businesses here in Prince George's County. That's why we tried to provide, you know, over $20 million in assistance to general businesses. And we just got an additional $6 million to help restaurants in particular over the winter. And so we've tried to be reflective of what we're seeing in Prince George's County. We know we can't fully close Prince George's County. And that's why we still encourage people to do the little things with respect to wearing masks, to, you know, doing the social distancing, obviously doing the hand washing, particularly those who are serving those who may be more vulnerable to the disease. As we've discovered, this disease has no boundaries, doesn't care what class or race you are. It's going to impact you if you don't do those things to protect yourselves. As I said, we're doing the best we can. It doesn't mean we're being perfect, unfortunately. And we see that around not only the state of Maryland, the region, and country and the world, for that matter, as we're seeing the surge coming back, unfortunately.
But Mr. Chairman, I was going to say, if I may, I think a fine point needs to be put on this for Woodard and others who feel the way that she does. The issue with the nursing homes is not a Prince George's County issue. That is a state issue. And the governor, you know, to be quite honest, it's kind of out of the hands of the county. This is Annapolis. This is the governor, and he has, you know, arguably, rightly so, brought down the hammer because we are seeing these skyrocketing infections across the state. We've had more than 24 days, I believe, of infections. In north of 1,000, and so I think it's important, you know, for Woodard and others who are worried about loved ones who are feeling, you know, the pressure and the pinch of not being able to see them, that the reality is that this kind of comes down from on high in Annapolis.
Yeah, it's been interesting, obviously, you know, over the last month to, you know, we've all been in, in Maryland, we've been in a state of emergency. In Prince George's County, we've been in a state of emergency. I can't say that at the national level. And I think that's been part of the kind of the fits and starts of how we've been able to respond to this pandemic. You know, I won't even talk about, you know, the federal level and the White House, but even at the state level, you know, I'll give credit to Governor Hogan. You know, he was one of the first in March, you know, to shut down the state of Maryland, close our schools because we were dealing with something unknown. And I think people will, you know, have to judge, well, did we open too soon here in the state of Maryland, even though Prince George's County and other jurisdictions surrounding us, and I give credit again to County Executive Alsobrooks Brooks, because it's been those jurisdictions like Montgomery County, Anne Arundel, Howard, Baltimore City, and Baltimore County who have kind of been trying to do it together because we face the same kind of issues. And what you have, though, similar to at the federal level, is you have the state saying one thing, that, yes, it was okay to open, you know, during the summer and expand and get people back to business, which we understand. But now I think we're seeing the ramifications of that, particularly because, let's be honest, people are COVID fatigued. You know, they want to get back to a normal life. And unfortunately, we're not at that point yet. It's hopeful, obviously, and this is, you know, not going to be 100% saving grace, but with the fact that we see that vaccines are coming, how those are going to be distributed and how long that takes, you know, still to be seen. However, that doesn't absolve us as individuals from doing what we need to do to keep ourselves safe, our family members safe, and for those who are working in those fields to keep those people that they have responsibility for safe.
Yeah.
But this is an airborne disease, and it's very simple. It seems to be very simple to be able to catch, and you know, we just have to be mindful of that. That this is what we have to deal with right now.
Woodard, thank you so much. Hang in there. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Kim calling from Temple Hills. Kim, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Was wondering, is there any talk from the county about incentives or any kind of pay increase for teachers? We see that teachers single-handedly have had to rally and carry this school system trying to get the children back online for virtual learning. And I just wanted to know, we're doing it for first responders, but what about our teachers who are always strapped and underpaid?
No, first of all, let me say thank you to you for the effort. You know, I'm not only an elected official, like the old saying used to say, but I also have a daughter who's in public schools. I have one who graduated and one who's doing virtual now. And I know the difficulty that parents are facing. You know, I have several colleagues on the county council as well as neighbors whose kids, you know, are doing a virtual environment. And I know how difficult that is as part of that process. I have to say that the best avenue for you is to go to your school board. They are responsible for your budget and your pay and negotiations. I do want to commend, obviously, CEO Dr. Monica Goldson and Dr. Alvin Thornton, who's chair of the school system, for their efforts to adjust with the pandemic and COVID-19 under very difficult circumstances, and for the school board as well. I have to be honest, though. As county government and as the school system, although we did utilize the CARES Act funds to kind of fill some of the holes, we will be facing some tough economic times coming up next year, particularly in our next year's budget. The one thing that we've been able to do, particularly these past couple of years, working with our state delegation in Annapolis, is to move forward some additional opportunities with the Kerwin Commission and the Blueprint for Maryland's Future, which provides, if we are able to afford it, obviously the governor vetoed that legislation this year, and I know the General Assembly will be coming back in the session in January and have to make decisions about an override. But that would provide some funding if the state's not in a bad fiscal situation as well, which I'm sure they will be as well. So it is going to be difficult. So we did use our CARES Act funding, which is the federal funding, to do the hazard pay. The school system may be able to do that as well. So I'd ask you to go to your elected school board and appoint the school board members.
Kim, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking with Todd Turner, the outgoing chairman of the Prince George's County Council. If you have a question for him, you can give us a call right now. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I shift from COVID to some other things, I did have one other question about that. Early in the pandemic, the county executive was very vocal about getting resources from Annapolis. Well, now we are neck deep in the pandemic. Is the county, to your mind, getting what it needs from Annapolis? Are they getting the funding and or the supplies, PPE, for example, and some of the other things that are needed to continue to fight this as we go into the winter?
To my knowledge, yes. I can say that we have, obviously on the PPE, we've been able to do stockpiling during the course of the last several months. Obviously, if this surge continues, we may need additional assistance moving forward. As I indicated, we've gotten, within the last several weeks, additional state funding to assist us in some of the emergency assistance programs that we've had established, including the rental assistance, including assistance for our food service and restaurant community. So we have gotten that during the course of the year. And so I know the county executive and I were just before our Prince George's House and Senate delegations a couple of weeks ago and started talking about what will occur in the General Assembly in Annapolis coming up in the session that starts in January. And so we're going to continue to work together. It's about the partnership and about One Prince George's to be able to get the resources that we need, since we are one of those jurisdictions that has been severely impacted by COVID-19. And I would say that to our federal representatives, including, you know, Congressman Hoyer, Congressman Brown, Senators Cardin and Van Hollen, as they continue to work at the federal level to try to get the relief packages, and hopefully with the new administration, to assist us, because we still are going to struggle going into next year.
Mm. As you know, the search for a new police chief is ongoing. Considering where we are in America regarding criminal justice and, kind of the social upheaval that we're seeing and the issues that are facing police departments, how do you pick a police chief in this climate?
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting time. And one of the things I appreciate is, you know, even though we're dealing with COVID-19 and pandemic, you know, we have these other, national, regional issues that we're trying to address. And the county council and the county executive have taken some leadership with respect to that. As you recall, the county executive did make a change with respect to our police chief here in Prince George's County earlier this year. She did go on to establish what we call the Police Reform Task Force, which has been meeting since July of this year, and is expected to issue their final recommendations in the next several days, actually. And during this period of time, the county executive has also retained a national search firm to assist us in finding a new police chief for Prince George's County. One of the things that the firm did do probably late summer was actually to do a survey of our residents, and I'm just pulling it up now. So we had over 3,500 residents in Prince George's County complete the survey. It was about a 7-question survey. And the one thing that ranked the highest with respect to the top issues for an incoming police chief was about trust and engagement in the community. That was about 54% of the respondents said that was one of the most important issues. The next one is more personal connection between the police who are serving their neighborhoods. That came in at about 46%. And then responding to actually crime was the next highest one. And so it's interesting that people who engaged, in the survey, brought forth their vision for what a police chief would look like. I know the search firm is reaching out to some stakeholders to do a more in-depth review. The last update I received, we had our deadline for submitting your interest in the police chief, I believe, was at the end of October. We had, at that point, I think just over 30 responses, and those will be narrowed down through the search firm to come up with a number to go through. I'm not sure what the number will be ultimately, to go through kind of that interview and additional process. The one thing we did hear from the search firm is, because of the fact that there's so many vacancies in police chiefs around the country, and obviously we just learned of one with the District of Columbia just last week. So there is more competition out there and more opportunities for people to apply to be police chief. But in my mind, I think those issues that were highlighted as part of the survey, as well as having that connection, I have the privilege of representing two municipalities in Prince George's County, the two largest ones, the city of Bowie and Greenbelt, who have their own municipal police departments. And so when I first was in elective office in Bowie, that was the first year that we decided to have our own police department. And I think most residents in the city of Bowie, where, you know, I still reside, think it was a positive thing for us to establish that police department and relationship. And I know the two chiefs that we've had over that period of almost 15 years now have worked hard to build that kind of community policing model. And I think that will be important as a model here in Prince George's County as well.
Briefly, I mean, you spoke about the survey, and that's important. But from a leadership position, briefly, what do you want to see in a police chief?
So haven't had the opportunity to work with several police chiefs here in Prince George's County, as well as the municipal government. You need somebody that needs to be responsive, not only to elected officials, the residents, and also the members of the police department as part of that. But you have to be community oriented. You have to be out there. You have to develop those relationships and trust, as was, you know, the number one response, you know, from the residents who participated in the survey, because that at the end of the day will make the difference between those who want to assist in making sure their communities are safe and well policed. And there's also responsibility for them to take action when an officer does not do what they are supposed to do. And that we've seen that example here just this year in Prince George's County. So I think that's the kind of leader that we need, whether that leader comes from within the department or without outside the department. I think those are the traits that I would be looking for if I have an opportunity or, you know, to interview a potential police chief here for Prince George's County.
Well, and that's about the police chief. Now I want to ask you about the police reform task force, which is in a great many ways separate and apart from, you know, the selection of a chief. Mm-hmm. Although the two are in some parts also connected, but
right.
you attended virtually the reform updates. There have been a few. Where do you believe this process is? Is it is this wish list just that? Are some of these things that could come out of this task force unrealistic, more realistic? What do you say?
I think they're going to have a wide-ranging set of recommendations based on what I've seen preliminarily anyway. The other factor that we have to consider is some of these things are within the control of the county, and some of those things are in the control of the state. And so I know at the same time that the county has been going through this process, both the state through the state Senate and the House of Delegates have had their own work groups and had made recommendations with respect to state policy, which impacts us as a local jurisdiction. And so I think, you know, from my perspective, although I'm not going to be in leadership anymore, we do have to see where Annapolis goes with respect to some of those things that they control and whether or not the recommendations from our local work group fit within what the state ultimately does. So obviously the big issue at the state level is the Law Enforcement Bill of Rights. We as Prince George's County don't control that. That's state law. So any changes with respect to when there is an incident, who gets to investigate it, you know, what due process rights are given to officers, that is all controlled at the state level. What we can control locally, and I think the police reform work group has talked about this and has recommendations, is, okay, how do we do recruiting? How do we make sure personnel information with respect to if somebody's coming from a different police force about hiring a person who has some kind of history? So those are the things that we can control locally as a police department, as a county government. And so I'm sure there will be several recommendations with respect to that. I believe there were four or five subcommittees that dealt with different areas and issues, including discussion. I know it was something that was started earlier this year with the school system about the school resource officer program. And so I understand there will be recommendations related to that. There's a lot of, there has been a lot of discussion both in our work group as well as at the state level and even nationally as part of that. Some of that will require legislation by the county council, and so we'll take that. Some of it will require budgetary issues as well, and some will be administrative or policy issues that the police department can do. I know it's going to be a major issue, and the fact that we put together, you know, a considerate community-based work group to try to address those issues, as well as professionals and a judge and a member of the state legislature to be co-chairs of that group. I think those recommendations will form the basis of what we are able to do in the future. Now, what we might be able to do or not, you know, that's to be seen, but I think they will provide a good foundation.
Let's talk a little bit about the National Harbor. A couple of weeks ago, the county executive kind of lowered the boom on the young people who have been there, those under the age of 17, unsupervised parents dropping them off, parties at, hotels. There was a shooting at one of them. As someone who has, who grew up in Prince George's County and now is on the outside looking in, to be completely transparent, prior to the county executive doing this, I was kind of like, what the heck? What is going on, down there? And, arguably the National Harbor is one of the gems of Prince George's County and certainly something to be proud of. But, in the midst of the pandemic and all these other things, How would you evaluate where they are right now? This is a COVID thing. This is a public safety thing. This is a what the heck is going on with our kids and where are your parents thing.
I think you hit them all on the head right there, Harold, as part of that. Part of it is a response to COVID-19. And let's be honest, we've been dealing with this for 9 months. A lot of the usual places where we would have our kids go are not open, whether it's going to a movie theater or, going to the gym. There are certain restrictions, some of the programs that we would traditionally provide have been impacted by COVID-19. So there's not that same release or opportunity for people to, particularly our young people, to be engaged in that way. It is a public safety concern. Obviously, we do want people to go to National Harbor. We want them to frequent the Gaylord hotels and the other hotels there. We want them to frequent the restaurants and the retail shops there. And so if we have kids who are unsupervised or causing issues, that creates an issue, an unsafe issue for people to want to come there, particularly in the time of, having a pandemic. It's all those kind of issues. And, let me put it this way, the response that the county executive did was only done as kind of the last option. Mm-hmm. There has been enforcement there through the police department. And I think it was, to be honest with you, sending a message that, we're not going to kind of tolerate this behavior. Now, if you're doing stuff legally and you're with your adult supervision, that's not an issue. But if you're doing something else, National Harbor or any place in Prince George's County, for that matter, should not be the case. But this was, from what I understand, both a public safety and a COVID-19 response to make sure that we're sending the proper message.
So this is, as I said, your last full day. Unlike a lot of municipalities, take the District of Columbia, for example, the chair in Prince George's is a peer elected vote. When is that going to happen? Who's got your vote?
So traditionally the first Tuesday in December we do our ceremonial, what we call the exchange of gavel. So that will be tomorrow morning. We'll be doing that process. I can say this, Harold, that I'm confident that my colleagues and I will elect people who are responsible and will continue the hard work that I've done and previous council chairs have done in order to try to move Prince George's County forward, continuing the work with our partners, whether it's the county executive, the school system, or delegations in Annapolis, or our federal delegation, to continue to try to address, obviously, this crisis that we have, but also to put Prince George's County on the road to recovery at some point. And I do, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about all the things that we've been trying to do. You know, we have the Police Reform Task Force. We also have what we call Responsible Legacy Task Force to talk about, you know, past racial and injustice issues and naming of different things. I know other jurisdictions have done that. We have a work group that I'm heading to talk about food security, something that we had an issue prior to the COVID-19 and obviously was exacerbated. And so we're trying to come up with best practices and how we can provide, make sure that our residents have food that they need, whether it's a crisis or not. We passed legislation this year, being the first in the nation to provide healthy standards for kids' meals at our restaurants. We've also passed legislation to provide incentives in order to encourage grocery stores and healthy food options in those areas of the county that don't have them. So with everything else that's going on, you know, it was a very successful year. I mean, we went through, you know, a census process for the first time. We increased the numbers of people who self-responded in the census. Obviously, we did a outstanding job with a difficult election, both during the primary in June and in November, going to a, you know, vote-by-mail system and a hybrid system. And I commend our Board of Elections here in Prince George's County. And we're still asking for the state to assist us to pay for some of those things. So maybe we haven't gotten all that we wanted, but we continue to do that. Mm. And so, you know, as I'm sitting here reflective and preparing comments for tomorrow, I'm very confident that Prince Georgians will continue to meet the need, that their county government will continue to do the best they can to serve them. And so I'm hopeful, and I just look forward to doing it as a regular council member now, okay, instead of being the chair.
And who has your vote?
We'll find out tomorrow.
I was waiting for that answer to that question. Todd Turner, outgoing chair of the Prince George's County Council, thank you so much for spending some time with us and kind of, you know, laying out your thoughts and your vision for where the county is right now and where we're headed. I appreciate your time, and certainly please continue to keep yourself and your family safe.
I will, and you as well, and to all your listeners also, Harold. Thank you.
Thank you. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, November 30th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.